You will observe that whenever a particular sequence or series of units occur in the rhythmical functioning of a movement, that this series acts as the conditioning frame of whatever subsequent elaborations and combinations may be built up upon that foundation. For instance, supposing a prime movement of an atom to be a three-sided tangential, A to B, B to C, and C back to A, whatever secondary movements may arise, and remember this, that movement in a straight line is never maintained after the original impulse dies away. Conflicting forces reduce it to a modification of the primal circular, so that the atom, which in its movement originally pursued a triangular course, will finally arrive at a movement consisting of three spirals arranged in a triangle. Each spiral movement will be executed under the conditions governing the A_B segment, then the BC segment, then the CA segment. Therefore, if you knew what the influences were, you would know the nature of the primary movement underlying the spiral which appears only to the superficial observer. This is the principle underlying astrology, and this is the reason why the science of numbers plays an important part in all practical applications of cosmic principles. The prime movement of an atom is a vortex, nothing else, a mere spinning round a core of motionless vacuum. The atom you have seen described is not a prime atom but an elaborate and complex structure. It is only when the prime atoms combine together that such secondary movements are set up. Now an atom which is of a triangular structure can form units with as many other atoms as it has facets. When each facet has become attached to an atom, the group is complete and has attained a state of equilibrium of stress within itself. It can no longer grow by accretion but must act as an unit, and can only enter into association with other units of like type whose angles of stress are similar. The prime atom, as I have said, is a simple vortex, and the composite atoms of different types arise according to the number of tangential angles into which the circumstances of counter-influences may draw the vortices. The vortices, be it noted, first arise in the angles where the rays converge upon the central stillness. It is the close juxtaposition of forces which set up the secondary currents. Therefore, in the sphere which surrounds the central stillness are to be found the primal atoms. These, however, soon take on the secondary tangential movement and thus form alliances among themselves, as before described. As you have already been told, in addition to the movement of the rays, there is the movement of the circles about the central sun. This movement gives rise to centrifugal action, and the atoms tend to swing out towards the periphery. The more complex the atom, the more strongly will it feel the centrifugal action, so that you will find that the circles contain atoms of gradually increasing complexity as they succeed one another. These atoms, arising in the angles of the rays, when they feel the influence of the centrifugal force, go out along the line of a ray. Each atom then, has in itself forces of two rays which set up the primal vortex and then goes out along the path of one of these rays. Evolution upon the cosmic planes may first be observed as the gradual filling of the circle of space with atoms, infinity ions passing in the process. Thus the prime atoms occupy circle 1. The first form of composites circle 2, combinations of these composites circle 3 and so on. Now these types of matter, which we may call them, are thus spread in concentric spheres throughout the cosmos, out to the limit of the ring pass knot, going out along the lines of the rays, so that while the first circle contains only atoms of its own type, each succeeding circle has in its atom, interatomic movements representative of each of the inner circles. The construction of the outermost atoms being very elaborate. When the atoms reach the outermost sphere, a fresh force sets in. They have encountered the opposition of the ring pass knot. I may say in parenthesis, that the atoms of each plane form units among themselves by aggregation. Thus an atom, shall we say, of the third plane or circle, they are the same thing. In other words, circle is usually reserved for the cosmic, forms union by means of its facets. Anything from a triangular figure upwards of its aggregate atoms, in exactly the same way as previously described in regard to the primal atoms. Therefore, the atoms in the outermost circle are an exceedingly complex system of movements within movements. Having gone out from the central stillness with a centrifugal force, they are now rebuffed by the ring pass knot, and, owing to the rebuff, return with a spiral movement. This it is which lends its peculiar formation to the rays. Having reached the center, they then speed outwards with a straight centrifugal motion along the line of the opposite ray to the one by which they entered the center, to return again in the same way, but at a slightly different angle, which will cause them, upon the next outgoing path, to follow the next ray to the preceding one, and so they work their way round the circle. When repulsed by the ring pass knot, they make a circular movement upon the plane of the outermost circle, thus feeling its forces from all angles. They repeat this movement upon each plane as they return. Now, as you have already been told, each movement in space continues as a movement, therefore every influence that plays upon these atoms is registered in the reaction of stresses within their structure, so that each atom returns to the central stillness infinitely more complex after each journey. Each ray, intersecting the circles at a different angle, causes the atom traveling upon its path to experience different influences on its journey. Therefore, the final complexity of these atoms, when the complete circuit has been described, though it is capable of mathematical expression, cannot be conveyed by the finite intellect. But could you grasp the geometry of these planes, could you know their numerical calculus, you would hold the key to the universe. These structures are still referred to as atoms, not, as in the case of chemistry, on the hypothesis that they cannot be resolved into any simpler structure, being homogeneous, but on the basis that, though composite, when once formed they cannot be resolved at all, but are permanent units. It will thus be seen that the flowing out of the atoms to the circumference and their return to the circle marks a phase of evolution of the cosmos. And the completion of the circuit of the rays by an atom marks a phase of evolution of that atom. When it has completed this circuit, it has experienced all the forces that the cosmos can offer it, and when all the atoms evolved have completed the circuit, and the evolution of atoms upon such tide is limited, because after a certain proportion of force has taken up a tangential form, a state of equilibrium is reached within the cosmos. Evolution proceeds from the first movement to a state of uncompensated force until equilibrium is reached. This is the completion of an evolution, a state of equilibrium, and therefore a relative stillness. You will observe that we have now described three phases of cosmic evolution. The development of the rings was the first phase. They gave rise to each other, and acted and reacted on each other till a state of equilibrium was reached. Then, though they were static in relation to each other, that is to say, though in constant movement within themselves, they maintained their relationship constant towards each other and must continue ever so to do, since there is nothing to disturb them. The vortices, set up by the movements, however, give rise to secondary movements, the rays and the circles, and these, starting upon their respective courses, developed them until they also became static in relation to each other, and a second stage of evolution was passed through. These likewise in their turn, gave rise to the tertial movements which built the atoms. It will thus be seen that a phase of development is succeeded by a phase of equilibrium, during which that which has been developed is maintained, but nothing becomes. Its status is unchanged. These stages may be known to you under the names of the days and nights of Brahma, the day of evolution, the night of static balance, and then the overcoming of one set of forces by another, which causes the balance slowly to dip into manifestation again. The equilibrium is then over, and new forces are set going. These forces are based upon the relationships of the units previously built up and are influenced by these prime determinants, the rings, the rays and the circles. Within these limits, and subject to the nature of the units upon which they act, they form fresh combinations, permutations, and rhythms of action and reaction, until the new forces have found their equilibrium, and in their utmost completion and development. When the final combination has been achieved, they again become static in the cosmic balance until such period as the balance may again be overset. The oversetting of the balance is due to the same forces as set up the primal rings. The fact that movement generated movement and sets up a sphere of swirl outside its own path. That is why, though every fresh set of forces set in movement must attain to a final equilibrium determined by the factors of their natures, such an equilibrium being only a maintaining of position of movements relative one to another being therefore a relative stillness, must always overbalance and fly out into a new phase of evolution because it is a cosmos and built of movement. Movement generates movement. Chapter 5. The Genesis of a Solar System. You have got, I think, a clear concept of what has been called the framework of the cosmos, the rings, the rays and the circles. These having long since completed their evolution, have settled down to a static condition, the only change which occurs being that of the ring cosmos passing through the positive and negative spheres of influences for to the cycle. These make great phases the phase when the constructive influence is intensified, and the phase when the destructive influence is intensified. The circles and the rays flow steadily in their orbits, but when the positive phase is in being the outgoing currents are speeded up, and when the negative phase is in being the incoming currents are speeded up. The great rings three in number are the primal trinity, known to you as the absolute, though the implication of the word absolute is known to few. That is to say, the term absolute has been used by masters in teaching pupils without the pupils realizing its full import. Because there are three rings, the absolute is a triune force. These three, operating together with an indissoluble interaction, are the three which are one and the one which is three. Refer the terms of the Athanasian Creed to this trinity and you will grasp the meaning of the initiate who dictated it. The rays form together a complex system which will be referred to under the name zodiac. The circles are the cosmic planes. The central sun is that point in space which would be reached if the line from the sun of your system were drawn to the star known as Alpha Centauri and thence projected. You have seen how the atoms arise as vortices in the angles of the rays. How, in their simple form, they remain upon the first of the cosmic planes wherein they originated. When, however, they form alliances among themselves and become composite, their weight, metaphorically speaking, that is to say, their susceptibility to influences is increased, and susceptibility to influences is all that weight is esoterically. That fact forms the basis of levitation and flight through space. Cut off your influences and you can move freely. When the atoms become composite, centrifugal forces drive them outwards. And, finding the path of the flowing rays, they proceed by these as being the lines of least resistance. When they reach the next circle, they remain there, having found their level of gravity. Then presently their composite atoms form associations and are again swung out by the path of a ray. Therefore, you will see that it is only when the extremely elaborate atoms of the seventh circle form alliances that they start back up the spiral to the central sun. You have heard how these atoms, in their journeyings, progress up and down the rays, for they are too highly evolved, too composite to be allowed to remain upon any plane. When an atom, however, has completed the circuit of the rays and seeks to start out again, it finds its place taken by the atoms of later development. It cannot enter that stress for it is full, it must therefore remain in the central stillness. No atom goes twice around the circuit, therefore the central stillness grows as evolution proceeds, and those atoms which have come home rest from their pilgrimage. And when the last atom has come home, the whole creation sinks to sleep, and the cosmic tides set inwards as the ring cosmos swings to its negative phase. Meanwhile the rays flow and return, and the circles swing on their path, but the atoms stir not, though each within itself contains an infinitude of balanced movement. When, however, the ring cosmos passes into its new phase, fresh attractions flow towards the periphery. Now the influence of the ring cosmos and the ring chaos must be clearly understood. When the influence of the ring chaos predominates, there is an unbalancing force, that is to say, the ring chaos is in its positive plane. And when the influence of the ring cosmos predominates, there is a compensating of force, it atones for the excessive force of chaos. Now chaos calls outwards into space, cosmos balances and compensates until a static condition is produced. We have seen that the first phase of atomic evolution has concluded with all the atoms evolved to their utmost complexity, withdrawn from the outer circles, and clustered round the central sun day the ring cosmos has done its work. All is balanced, static and sleeps. But as the cycle revolves, the ring chaos has its turn and it oversets the balance which has been achieved, and the most composite of the atoms feel first the centrifugal forces urging them and yet again seek to come forth. So the great units come out once more, down the lines of the rays, but they proceed, not now through empty space, but each circle is populated by these atoms of different degrees of complexity whose relative specific gravity holds them at that distance from the central stillness. These composite organisms, finding themselves thus surrounded by inferior organisms, draw them about themselves by the force of their whirling revolution, and thus, as they progress outward, each becomes surrounded by a sphere of the matter of each plane which it carries with it. Now the great organisms, which come forth are built up around the prime atoms of different tangential angles, and these, according to their numerical compositions, differ in size and also weight, and therefore find their appropriate bourne on different planes or circles where they are held by their relative specific gravity. The rays can carry them no further. The first phase of atomic evolution was essentially concerned with the rays, but in the second going forth with the great organisms, the circles have their phases, and these great organisms do not go out and back, but revolve with the circles, each in its appointed track. Therefore evolution has now built up, in addition to the primal statics the rings, the rays and the circles two more sets of statics the atoms, each in its plane according to type, that, owing to their nature, have settled down, having found their specific position, and the great organisms, which have also settled down, each to its radius of movement. The atoms move tangentially among themselves, and the great organisms revolve around the central sun, passing through the influence of the rays as they revolve. These, therefore, are relatively static, subject only to the cyclic changes produced by the phases of the rings, and the influences of the rays as they pass through them. Each of these great organisms can attract to itself as much of the matter of each plane that it passes through on its way out at the beginning of the second phase of its evolution as it can hold by the attraction of its mass, and it can pass out as far as the momentum of its mass can take it from the central sun day. Therefore its position is determined by the angles of the facets of the primal atom upon which it was built. That is to say, if the vortex set up in the angle of the rays moved in a three-sided path, it could go no further than the first plane beyond the central stillness. It would have to be a ten-sided figure to reach the seventh plane. You will thus see that each of these great organisms has for its key the number of the angles in the path of the original vortex which gives rise to it. This forms its limit and determines the circumference of its influence. This, it is, which determines its ring pass not. We have therefore developed a number of great organisms, which being exposed to the influence of the rings, the rays and the circles, themselves develop upon similar lines. That is to say, each of these aggregates of atoms sort themselves out according to the nature of the atoms composing them, and these atoms having developed under their prime influences, and having those influences established in their natures by the action and interaction they set up, form miniatures of the great cosmos, and these great organisms, these, that is to say, which are of the seventh plane, are known unto you as solar systems. That, in brief outline, is the history of the genesis of a solar system, and of solar systems in general of your own in particular. There are many other solar systems upon the seventh plane besides your own. Some of them are known to you as the stars, but the few you know are but an infinitesimal fraction of those, even of your own plane, which you do not know, and there are others upon other planes which are not perceptible to you in your present phase of evolution. You will perceive that each phase of evolution gives rise to a grand unity, which is a unit, though complex. First, the system of the rings which is the absolute. Then the system of the rays and circles, which is the cosmos, then the cosmic atoms, according to their planes, then the great organisms, which we will call the universes, also according to their planes. You have then, you see, the numerical series. If you will number them you will see how the numbers run. The universes, or solar systems are of the fourth cosmic phase of evolution. Now these universes undergo internal evolution upon the same lines as the cosmos, and these phases of internal evolution continue until they also become static within themselves, and their composite atoms flow into the central sun, each of its own system, and rest there. Then, when once again the influences of the ring chaos break up the cosmic balances, the great organisms, developed in each solar system, go forth and burst through the ring pass knot of that solar system and, as satellites, circle round it. Whereupon, the solar system which underwent disintegration, starts once again a new phase of its evolution, whose units are the composite atoms evolved in its previous evolution, passes again through all the phases of evolution, and again flings off the star seed. Meanwhile, these great organisms, which are first scattered, are repeating the process, each in its turn, so that the solar systems become, in their turn, cosmoi to those great organizations to which they gave birth, and so this process, which I will call the stellar evolution, goes on until a static condition is reached among the great organisms and their progeny, and then, the influences of the ring pass not, coming into action, a great system is sent back to the central stillness to come again forth when the influences of the ring chaos call them out. And such process continues until such time as the organization of the cosmos becomes so mighty in the force it has generated, that it bursts the ring pass knot, and the great organisms rush forth into the unmanifest, and by their swirling movement gather space about them, and, in their turn build new cosmoi. Such is the history of a cosmic evolution. You will perceive that each plane of evolution begets an organized systems of forces. These forces react to all influences that play upon them, and register the reaction in the movements of the space that is under their influence. They are therefore sentient because they react and register the reaction, and because they register the reaction they develop through experience so that even the three primal rings are sentient influences, capable of development. But they are so vast, these rings, and so simple, because the influences which act upon them are so few, that their individuality, though it exceeds the span of all imagination, is exceedingly primitive. Yet it is upon this vast and simple type that your individuality is built up. Therefore it is that you, small as you are, have your affinities with these cosmic beings and are influenced by their phases from the absolute down to the atom of your own earth, which is the secret wisdom. For the uninitiated man is acted upon by these forces, but the initiate, by his knowledge, escapes from their influence and uses them for his own ends. Should his ends be those of the cosmic evolution, he grows and develops through all its phases till he attains that static condition which is completeness, and, following the laws of the great organisms of which he is now one, he gives rise himself to a system. Chapter 6. Cosmic Influences on a Solar System. You have duly received the first part of the work. Your minds need to be thoroughly imbued with these principles in order that you may understand what is to follow. I will briefly recapitulate. Motion in space is the prime. When its circuit is concluded, it forms the ring cosmos, which gives rise to the ring chaos, which, by its secondary influence, causes the ring cosmos to form the ring pass knot. This is the three or trinity. The inflowing influences, converging upon the center, and radiating to the periphery are the rays, the 12. The motion of the cosmos gives rise to the 7, the bands or planes. The converging angles of the rays give rise to the tangential motions. These, when in opposition, give rise to the atoms. The atoms, moving in their turn along the paths of differing angularity, form the complex atoms, which centrifugal force sorts out upon their planes. These finally, in the outermost plane, when they combine again, not being able to go any further, return to the center. These are called the journeying atoms. The others are the static atoms, because they have settled down, so that you have in the central stillness, no atoms but only the primal forces. Upon the first plane you have atoms whose path is a triangular one, therefore the number upon this plane is based upon 3. The simplest atom presents 3 aspects, and the most complex is a multiple of 3. The atoms of the second plane have 4th in their number, and the third plane have 5, the fourth plane 6, and so on, down to the 7th which has 9. These are referred to as the secondary numbers, whereas the number of the cosmic forces are the primary numbers. You have then, as primaries 1, 3, 7 and 12, and as secondaries 3 to 9 inclusive. The prime tertiary is 10. 10 is the number of evolution, because it is the atoms of 10 angles that evolve. You will perceive from the foregoing that the primaries give rise to each other and have settled down to stability, cycle following cycle in orderly progression. They have completed their course, and have achieved the maximum complexity of which they are capable. Under the influence of their changing phases, the secondary movements pursue their courses. The secondary movements obey the laws of their own natures, subject to the laws and conditions of the primaries. Likewise with the tertiaries, each plane of existence pursues its course, subject to the influences of that phase which gave rise to it. For example, the ring cosmos passes through its positive and negative phases. The rays, therefore, are sometimes flowing faster upon the negative and outgoing arc, when the negative phase of the ring cosmos is prevailing upon their segment, and sometimes the inflowing, or positive aspect, is speeded up as their segment of the universe is governed by the positive phase of the movement of the ring pass not. Each segment of a ray is influenced by the circle in whose area zero it lies. Therefore it will be seen that a journeying atom will be subject at a given moment to the influence of the ray upon which it is traveling, to the position upon that ray, whether upon the outflowing or inflowing aspect of the plane which it is passing through, and to the phases of the ring pass not. Therefore, if you wish to understand the conditions of a given traveling atom, it is not enough to know the facets of its path, you must also know the phases of the influences to which its nature is reacting. This is called sidereal astrology. But the phases of this astrology are so vast that they concern only the lives of the solar systems, just as the planetary astrology concerns the phases of the planets. The nearest point of contact which you have to sidereal astrology is known to you as the zodiac. It is obvious then, if you consider the life of a man, you must consider it in relation to the solar system of which he forms a part, and you must also consider that solar system in relation to the cosmos. Sidereal astrology will give you the phases of evolution. You see then, that they're atoms of specific types that have settled down permanently upon each plane, and move at constant distances from the central stillness, in the same way that a liquid, containing different substances in solution will, if placed in a glass tube and whirled rapidly round at the end of a string, show clearly the sorting out of the component parts of the mixture according to their specific gravity, the heaviest or most composite towards the periphery, so that at the conclusion of the process you can perceive the graduated bands of different types of substance. These atoms have proceeded as far as their nature permits them to proceed in evolution. You will perceive that each new phase of evolution achieves that utmost complexity that its factors permit, and then settles down to a rhythmic repetition of the sequence it has arrived at. The fresh phase of evolution, which begins when the next phase of the ring chaos overtopples the stability achieved, starts where the last phase finished, because it already has in its nature all that the last phase has achieved. You see now the significance of the maxim as above, so below. The cosmos is the framework upon which all is built up. You start where God leaves off, therefore what was in God is in you, and something of your own which is called free will, though it is a bad name. Now with regard to the evolution of the traveling atoms, these give rise to solar systems. You will remember in the previous lectures that these solar systems arose on different planes of the universe according to their cosmic specific gravity. That is to say, they start their evolution at different phases of cosmic development. But you will remember that the outgoing atoms gather up matter from each plane they pass through to build into their universe. Those systems which are developed upon other planes than yours I will not deal with in the present course of study, for they are too remote for practical purposes. I will consider, however, the phases of development through which the systems pass that originate upon the seventh cosmic plane, of which your solar system is an example. Let us therefore trace the life of a particular traveling atom which is to become your sun and attendant system of planets. You will remember that it has been round the circle of the cosmic rays and experienced their 12 influences, both positive and negative, and that it has, in its composition, matter of the 7 cosmic planes,